going on? This is Toki and Noah, and you're listening to Chicago Bullseye.
Give it all you got, take your very best shot, and may the best team win. The time is now, the name of the game is action. They're on the floor, and they're ready to score, so let the game begin. And let's see how the
Hello again, everybody. Welcome to another exciting edition of the Chicago Bullseye, a very special Bullseye today, as we have the great writer for The Athletic, Darnell Mayberry. Darnell, how you doing?
I'm good, Fred. How are you today?
Living the dream. I can't tell you how excited I am to have you on. There's a few writers in Chicago I can't stand, a few other guys I love, and you're one of them, so it's great to finally have you on. You and Casey Johnson are right up there along with Stephen Noe. The Atlantic, and you guys are the reason why I subscribe. So it's great to have you on and talk about my beloved Bulls. So really excited.
No, I appreciate it, man. The pleasure's all mine. I'm obviously new, still new in town, and getting my feet wet and learning who's who and what's what, and just following you on Twitter, and Stephen did that great article on you back in January. So it's Bulls fans like you that make this place a rewarding place to be and work and live. And just a great sports town with great sports fans, and you're one of them. So I appreciate you, man. It's an honor to join you.
Oh, thank you so much for saying that. So let's start out a little bit about you, Darnell. I want to hear the 411 on where you grew up, a little bit about your basketball history, the team you followed, and how you got into sports writing.
Oh, man. I'll kind of give you the Cliff Notes version just because I don't think too many people care. So, going back in high school, I wanted to be a sports writer. I finished high school in the D.C. area, Northern Virginia. So, I was reading Michael Wilbon and Tony Kornheiser in the Washington Post, and Steve Weish was the Wizards beat writer back then, and he's since moved on to cover the NFL and do a great job of it. But, Tony Kornheiser and Michael Wilbon, and they went from columnists at newspapers to television. That was sort of the path that I wanted to take. So I went to school to actually try to be on television. I wanted to be a sports center anchor. And then somewhere along the way, someone said, hey, why don't you work on your writing skills? Because that's what really separates journalists. If you're able to write, you can pretty much do anything. So I went to the school newspaper, got my first byline, and fell in love with it. So this is exactly where I wanted to be since I was probably a senior in high school. So fortunately, it worked out early in my career, and I've been blessed.
Oh, that's fantastic. Were you a Wizards fan then, growing up in Northern Virginia?
Unfortunately, I was, and sort of still am.
Oh my God.
It's a job now, and I put that on the back burner. I'm not nearly as much of a fan as I used to be, being a professional in this industry now, but that's the team I grew up rooting for, and it was the first NBA game I ever went to back in middle school when I went to school up there for a year in middle school. So the Billets were my team, man. Rod Strickland, my second favorite player of all time.
I love Rod Strickland, believe it or not. He went to DePaul here in Chicago. He was one of my favorite players growing up. Got just the best handles you'll ever see on a player. Just fantastic guy, fantastic player. So that's great to hear. Although I actually spent a lot of time working in Northern Virginia in Tyson's Corner area, Sterling. So I spent many a night berating Wizards fans about their team. people don't realize, I think the Wizards still haven't had a 50-win season. Or did they have one a few years ago? I think they went like 30 years without a 50-win season. Is that correct?
Yeah, it was. I think it was like the longest in the NBA. It's a pretty inept franchise, man. And then they go out this summer and get Dwight Howard, Austin Rivers, and Jeff Green. Like, fourth seed, here we come.
And then all the Wall controversy going on now. I mean, my gosh, just it's a such a tough. It's really I feel for Washington fans. I know how much they've suffered over the last. Obviously the Capitals won, but hockey's kind of a minor sport. So, everybody else, though, it's so disappointing for them. Although the Arenas era was pretty good for you, right? That was a pretty nice, interesting period of time.
It was actually the best era for me. And my favorite memory, one of my favorite memories as a sports fan, I've got a couple teams. I'm a Michigan fan, Minnesota Vikings fan and Wizards fan, and I don't really have a baseball team. But the going back to what year was that? We actually beat the Bulls in the first round of the playoffs. I think it was 2005. I want to say.
Yeah, that was when exactly Heinrich was actually decent for a few years there during that period. Yeah,
I'll never forget it. Jared Jeffries had the little steal on the inbounds pass and sealed the game and the series with a fast break dunk.
Good stuff.
And I drove. I was actually working in Akron, Ohio at the time, and I drove from there to back to D.C. to attend that game. I just got tickets, sitting behind the basket, was rooting my face off, man. That was probably my last time as a fan. And then later that year, I ended up getting a job covering the New Orleans / Oklahoma City Hornets. And back down in Oklahoma City. So, it's just crazy how things come kind of full circle. I mean, I was a fan in that moment rooting against the Bulls, and now here I am covering the Bulls.
That's amazing. That was 05. That was the year before the Bulls really took off in the 05-06 team that I thought played really well, and the 06-07 team, which added Ben Wallace, that won 49 games. That was a real turnaround there. So it's so always good to talk and relive that era. But so you ended up in OKC, though. How did that happen? How did you get that job? And what year did you get out there?
So I took the job down there in the fall of 2005.
Okay.
So I was working. I was doing high schools and University of Akron men's basketball for the Akron Beacon Journal. I met the then sports editor at the Oklahoman just at a journalism conference, and we kept in touch. He reached out to me one day and said, hey, I have this opening for an Oklahoma State football writer if you're interested. And that was a step up from what I was doing. I loved the Akron Beacon Journal. I loved covering University of Akron men's basketball. Got to spend some time around two of LeBron James's high school teammates and one, his first high school coach, Keith Dambrot. So that was a rich time to be there. So that was fun. But right after I began talking to the Oklahoman, Hurricane Katrina hit, and that's when the Hornets had to evacuate and find a temporary home. People forget this now, but
I did.
Chris Paul played his first 2 years in Oklahoma City, and that was my first 2 years covering the NBA. When he spent his first 2 years in Oklahoma City with the Hornets when they were displaced because of Hurricane Katrina. So that's kind of how I got my start, and then obviously we know what happened with the Sonics becoming the Thunder, and I was still on staff, and it was just sort of natural for me to continue in my role as an NBA reporter down there and then get the Thunder for, I think, eight seasons, their first eight seasons down there.
Oh, this is fantastic. How did I forget that? I mean, I do remember they played in Oklahoma City. I don't recall them playing there for two full years. And
yeah,
they sold out every game, right? I mean, pretty much at that point.
Yeah. For most, especially the first season, second season attendance kind of dwindled because people, had the feeling that they were going back, but they still came out and supported. And it's what paved the way for Oklahoma to get the Thunder, because without the success and the support that they showed for the Hornets, temporarily, on a temporary basis, they were selling out the place, and it was just phenomenal support. That showed the NBA, the Board of Governors, Clay Bennett and his group that this could work in small market Oklahoma. So, that's sort of the history of everything.
What did you think of Chris Paul covering him as a superstar on those two teams?
Phenomenal. I mean, he was just a phenomenal player then. He won Rookie of the Year. You could tell that he was a star in the making. And it was actually funny for me because, I scalped tickets to see him play an NCAA tournament game his last year at Wake Forest. I sat way up in the nosebleeds. I couldn't afford the good seats. And so I guess that was 2004?
Yeah.
Somewhere around there. So, I sat there and watched. I think they actually lost to Kevin Pitsnoggle and West Virginia that game. But I was a huge Chris Paul fan, and then to be able to cover him was sort of surreal. And then again, it kind of removes some of the fandom because, you know, you have to work with these people now, and they're not sure. just, you know, people you look up to or idolize, for lack of a better word, but you have to actually work with them, and there are going to be some disagreements. So it was a good experience. I enjoyed it, but it was sort of surreal in the beginning to cover the guy that I was rooting for like crazy. And I actually scalped tickets to go see play an NCAA tournament game.
Oh, yeah. I mean, how great is that? Were you friendly with him? I mean, if you see him today, would he know who you were?
Yeah. I mean, in fact, I just saw his brother CJ out in Vegas and at Summer League, and, you know, said what's up to him. And, you know, he's got great parents. You know, he's married with two kids now, I believe. So, you know, it's good to see that he's coming into his own as a man. But yeah, I mean, he definitely knows who I am. And, you know, I wouldn't say we have a great relationship, but,
yeah,
you know, we're cordial when we see each other.
Well, if you tell him, you got to tell him to do something about those State Farm commercials, because I had State Farm for 2 years. The guy never took me bowling. He never played charades once. So it's false advertising.
You need a better agent.
Exactly. You're there when the Sonics come to Oklahoma City. And now Durant's on that team. What was that like? You must have had a pretty good relationship with him, or developed some type of relationship with him over the years. What was he like to work with?
He was a class act. And I still think he is a class act. I think a lot of his reputation has been ruined from a competitor standpoint, but just off the court, the guy is genuine, and he'll give you the shirt off his back. So I loved my time around Kevin Durant. And just like Chris Paul, you could see that he was a star in the making, and everyone knew what a special talent he was. So it was just a real gift for Oklahoma, the people of Oklahoma, to go from Chris Paul for 2 years, his first two seasons, to Kevin Durant's second season, and watching him become what he is today. All the things that he's showing now with the Warriors, you could see developing back then, So
yeah.
So that was a pretty cool experience.
So I found kind of Oklahoma City and the Bulls over the past decade to be kind of similar. The Bulls, obviously, a little bit less so, but still, some great draft picks, but the titles were lost for various reasons, And obviously, it doesn't get any better in Oklahoma City taking Durant, Westbrook, and Harden. The Bulls had a couple good years there with Noah Rose, Taj, and Butler. But for whatever reason, it didn't work out. Covering both organizations, what are the similarities that you've seen, and what are the major differences?
There are a lot of differences. I'm not sure how many similarities there are. The cultures are just completely different.
Good or bad? What do you mean? Could you expound on that a little?
Well, everything is so close to the vest in Oklahoma City. Everything is sort of protected. Everything is geared toward protecting the players and keeping the media at bay. In some ways, keeping the fans at bay, because, I'm not going to be the media guy who gets up here and complains about media access, but media access is a vehicle for fans to get to know their favorite players.
Yes.
And coaches. So, we're not there because we're just dying to be there. We're doing a job, and we're trying to get fans information. The Thunder can make that hard at times. And the Bulls, at least in my experience, I've heard other stories from when they had Derrick Rose and, some of these other stars that have been through here. They were a little more buttoned up. But, my first year here on this beat, I have no complaints about how the Bulls run their operation, because it's been, access has been great. If you need to talk to players, get to know them, you can, without interference. And I think that's the biggest difference from a media perspective in terms of my day-to-day job.
Very interesting. How about your relationship with John Paxson and Gar Foreman as opposed to Sam Presti?
It's a little different, and the biggest difference is, there are a few guys in Oklahoma City. There's several here in Chicago who are competing for, information or, insight or explanations, whatever it might be, from Paxson and Foreman, that, these guys can't talk to everyone. Well, I was working for the paper of record down in Oklahoma, and you know, that allows you, affords you a certain level of cachet or credibility that, you know, you're going to be a guy that's reached out to. So, well, with that being said, you know, if I've ever needed to talk to John Paxson or Gar Foreman, you know, they've been available to me. Yes. And not just to me, but to Stefan and I believe Will as well at the Athletic. So, you know, again, no complaints. I had a really good first year, and looking forward to building and growing and continuing to do good work.
How about the differences in the fan base? I mean, the Bulls have been number one in attendance since 2010. I know Oklahoma City has rabid support. I think both fan bases are very supportive of the team. But what have you noticed in the difference in the fan base?
Come on now, Fred. You really going to ask me that, man? You know the difference between the Bulls fans and the Thunder fans. You going to make me say it?
I'd like to hear somebody else say it. Like, I want to get it documented here. What do you sense? A lot more negativity?
Well, yeah, the Bulls fans, they're negative. And not all, you know, you lead the charge of the optimistic bunch.
Yeah, we're a small group. I'd say 5%.
Yeah, I should pick your brain about why that is. It's just such a cloud of pessimism and it's fair. You know, I'm not going to be, again, that media guy who tells other fans how to support their team or root for their team or whatever. They're entitled to do what they want as long as it's respectful and within the rule of law. But it was surprising to me how negative Bulls fans are.
Yeah, yeah. Especially from the outside. I'm sure from the outside, you probably said, well, this organization's been, you know, somewhat successful, pretty competitive for the amount of time, you know, you've been doing this business. I think we've had two losing seasons since 2004, and yet the negativity is so pervasive and so awful, it's kind of nauseating to me. You know, I know you see it.
And then that's the biggest thing coming from Oklahoma City, where it was a brand-new team, and for the most part, a brand new market, you know, and if you said anything bad about the team, they'd be ready to run you out of town. So, you know, I was sort of looked at as the negative Nancy in Oklahoma City, because I just, you know, and my philosophy hasn't changed. I call it how I see it either way. If someone's doing great, I'd say it, I write it. If someone is playing awful, I'd say it, I write that. You know, it's been a little bit refreshing for me to be able to shed that label coming here, where there's so much negativity, and you know, I feel like I'm objective, and my objectivity is kind of blends in and doesn't. I don't think that you can paint me one way or the other, and if you do, then I think it's just probably speaks more to your biases than my lack of objectivity.
Yeah, I mean, I can tell you the reasons why. I've studied it pretty in depth. There's two reasons why. The firing of Thibodeau was a big one.
Uh-huh.
And I think you probably could sense that too, that, you know, there's a large swath of fans that are just total dopes that, you know, just believe defense wins championships. This mantra, it's been kind of ingrained in Chicago since 1985. And you know, without seeing the big picture, that the guy was running this team into the ground, which he's now doing in Minnesota, and you know, and he won the PR game. You know, he had guys all around, and he had Colley basically writing a comic book. You know, the Adventures of Tom Thibodeau, and he won the PR game, and you know, so that was number one. And number two, you know, what happened with this team? They had Rose and Noah. Noah like won a. Was a first team All NBA, and within a year he could barely play in the playoffs. He was so awful, you know. So it wasn't just Rose who had a massive decline. It was another part of their core, Noah, who's not, you know, even really able to play in the NBA anymore, and he's, you know, 30 years old. I don't ever recall two great players like that having such a precipitous decline. And of course, people are going to be frustrated. I thought we had a title team right when Oklahoma City did in 2011, 2012, that era. And, you know, it just wasn't meant to be due to injuries and just decline of Noah, specifically Noah and Rose. And that leads to a lot of anger, a lot of frustration, and a lot of, you know, that's what you see now. And it's unfortunate, you know.
You know, one other thing I've noticed, Fred, is that there seems to be a lot of nostalgia among Bulls fans. You know, I hear a lot about the glory days, the good old days, you know, Michael Jordan's heyday, and even Derrick Rose. You know, that era is looked at and so favorably. It's looked upon so favorably that, you know, it's like, does anyone enjoy the here and now? Or you know, are we just stuck on, you know, what Jordan did and what, you know, the excitement Derrick Rose brought, which I get. You know, again, I'm not saying one's right or there's a right or wrong way, but it was just alarming to see how much nostalgia there is around here still from those days that were so long ago. And stepping here from Oklahoma City, you know, I mean, they don't have the history, the rich history. And due to whatever circumstances, you know, Kevin Durant making the controversial decision, there's not a lot of that goes on with their former players. Yeah. They miss them. They wish them well. They miss them when they leave, and they will always love them. But you know, they seem to look forward more than I've gotten the sense that Bulls fans do here.
Yeah, I mean, I can't really criticize that because I'm coded in it, in the nostalgia. Mm-hmm. I mean, the Bulls have brought me more joy in my life. The six titles, the 90s, I had more joy from the Bulls than I got from every major franchise in Chicago combined. You know, the Bears have won one title since 85. The Cubs have won one. I mean, and I don't care about the Sox. And, you know, the Hawks, again, hockey's kind of a minor sport to me, although they've done well lately. And, you know, just when you go through that, I think it spoiled a lot of people my age to have six titles in 8 years and have the best player on the planet, whoever played the game. And then you go from that to what we had to endure for 5 years with Krause and just a total disaster. You know, just an egomaniac who basically chased Jordan out of the city. I'll never forgive him for doing that. And then, you know, Paxson, I thought, made things at least palatable again, and I thought he's built two contending teams. What I don't understand are these younger fans, you know, these dopes putting up the billboards and, like, John Paxson bled for this team. He won three titles with this team. He coached on the 72-win team. I think he's uniquely positioned to do good things, and I think he's done a good job overall, especially drafting. And I want to talk logically with fans. I don't want to talk, you know, I know I get painted as, you know, this just insane homer, but I'm actually very intelligent. I know Bulls history inside and out, and I think I'm painted as a homer because I'm actually positive about the direction of the team, and that's just a result of the negativity, you know.
Anyway. Yeah.
Let's get back, though. I got so many more questions for you. I know you're pressed for time. Westbrook, your coverage of him, and what was your opinion on that dynamic with Westbrook and Durant and why they never won that title?
Well, injuries were the biggest reason. You know, you had the Russell Westbrook injury, followed by the Serge Ibaka injury, followed by the Kevin Durant injury. And it's like,
yeah,
you know, in consecutive seasons. And, you know, that's incredibly difficult to overcome. People want to say, well, if they didn't trade James Harden, they still weren't going to win a championship without Russell Westbrook. So, because the James Harden we see today was not the James Harden we saw back then. So,
right.
You know, the whole thing with Westbrook and Durant, you know, they didn't buy into some things that they should have bought into. You know, player movement, ball movement, extra pass. When they were doing it, they built a 3-1 lead on the Golden State Warriors in the West Finals before they, you know, wet the bed. But, you know, they didn't buy in to a certain degree. They didn't buy in the defense individually like they should have. In fact, one season, you know, the Thunder were just transparent and candid about how they would allow their men to go by them on the perimeter so Serge Ibaka could clean it up.
Yes, yes.
I'm like, okay, yeah. Well, that's one strategy. But, you know, so I always just thought that Durant and Westbrook should have bought in more defensively, and they did at times, but, you know, it wasn't consistent. And so what you noticed up here in Chicago was that they had the great defense but lacked offensively. Well, it was the opposite for the Thunder. You know, they were great offensively in various ways. I mean, they still bogged down at times and played too much ISO ball, but, you know, they had two of the best offensive players in the world. But defensively, it just got worse and worse as the years went on because those guys didn't buy in. And I'm a firm believer that attitude reflects leadership. And, you know, when your two main guys aren't buying in, you know, what's going to give anyone else incentive to buy in? So it has a lot to do with all of that. And then coaching could have been better. Scott Brooks, I thought, was a little in over his head back then, and I thought he made some mistakes. So they could have used, some better coaching, some better moments from Scott Brooks, one of the two. So I think it was a mixture of a lot of different things.
So I agree with you wholeheartedly about, especially specifically Durant. I remember in the 2011 playoffs when they lost to the Mavs, I really felt like they should have won that series. I thought they had the more talented team, but his defense was awful. And it wasn't to me that he really turned it on. All of a sudden, he's playing Golden State, and they're up 3-1. I'm like, this is incredible defense. I didn't know he could even show it. Which brings me to Jabari Parker, who I found, I mean, I'm not saying he's Kevin Durant, but I see a lot of similarities from Durant's first 3 years to Parker's first three outside of the two ACL tears. But, you know, I think Parker's got this reputation as a kind of a ball stopper. And you wrote a very interesting article in The Athletic, which I must admit I disagreed with a lot of it. But I'd love to hear your take and give a little bit more 411 for anyone who hasn't read it yet, and you must go read it, on why you think the Jabari Parker signing is a lot riskier than the Bulls might have you believe.
Yeah, so thanks for reading it. I appreciate that. So I just want to clarify for people who may have read it or are going to read it after listening to this, perhaps, that it's not an indictment of Jabari Parker alone. And it's not a prediction that this will be a failed experiment. I just think that it's going to be a lot that they have to maneuver. There's going to be a lot of moving pieces, and there's going to be a lot of egos that need to be managed because you've got so many young players now. I think I counted 10, all under the age of 24 or younger.
Yes.
And so that's a lot. And you've got so many of them that are in a place where they need to establish themselves for various reasons. And that's one of the things I laid out in the article. You got Bobby Portis and Cameron Payne going into their fourth seasons. It's their contract year to get the rookie scale extension. You know, Chris Dunn going into his third season, where now he has to prove that he is capable of being an elite point guard in this league. Zach LaVine trying to prove he's worth $78 million. Jabari Parker on a prove-it deal. He's got the $20 million. Well, he's got to go out there and ball out to get the other half of that $40 million or, you know, position himself to line up for another team. So you've got all of these different – and, oh, yeah, by the way, Denzel Valentine, who swears he's a starter. I know that's your guy, but I don't think he's starter material, Fred. I'm sorry to tell you.
How dare you? You didn't not see the Drew League highlight?
yeah, not yet at least. I mean, yeah. I think he has potential to get there, but I don't think he's starter material at this stage in his career.
Got you.
So, you know, you've got all of these guys with all of these individual goals and aspirations, and they want to establish themselves in this league, which every player wants to do, every young player wants to do when they first come into the league. I think it's rare to find players who, you know, are all about team and don't have any self-interest or self-desires that they want to achieve. So I think for that reason, it's going to be incredibly difficult. And then you've got a coach in Fred Hoiberg who, you know, Jimmy Butler had some strong comments about not too long ago. And, you know, we've seen some issues with Jimmy Butler, with Joakim Noah. So is he going to be able to control these guys and not control in a bad, it's a bad word. Is he going to be able to get these guys on the same page and one accord and playing together, playing hard, playing smart? That's a big task for Fred Hoiberg and his staff. So there's just so many question marks that I do feel like it's a risk. And again, it's not a prediction that it's going to fail. It's not an indictment on Jabari Parker, but it is to negate the idea or the notion that this is a low risk move. I don't see it as a low risk move. I think there is a lot of risk. And if it fails, then you will have wasted a year toward this rebuild. And to me, that's not progress. That's a failed year that you'll never get back. So
okay.
For all of those reasons, I just think it is a risk.
So let me counter and take devil's advocate on a couple of these issues. So seven players that you specifically mentioned that were 24 and under. I know there's 10, but you know there's really seven that matter, and that's Portis, Campaign, Valentine, Markkanen, Dunn, Parker, Levine. Campaign and Valentine, to me, they got to be facilitators. That's what they do well, and in doing so, I think a major concern about them being selfish, it's kind of, you know, I'm not worried about them, because if they're not facilitators, then they're not going to be in the league, and I think that's where their value lies, right? Now, so it really comes down to Portis, Markkanen, Dunn, Levine, Parker. I want to first start with Portis, because there was something in the article that you mentioned that I had not seen anywhere. Quote, unquote, Portis and his reps reportedly are sitting on an early contract extension offer from the Bulls, end quote. Do you have any idea how much that was for? And is that's a source that you got within the team? Because I haven't heard that.
In the article, and I don't have it in front of me, but it was a report from Casey Johnson of the Tribune.
Okay.
It was buried in one of his pieces about something else, actually. And so the Bulls, according to, you know, the Tribune, did make an offer to him. Whether that's still on the table or not, who knows what that number is? I don't know. But there seems like there have been conversations on that front. And, you know, for whatever reason, Bobby and his representatives weren't comfortable and, you know, just maybe want to ride it out and see what they can get. Maybe as the season gets closer, you know, to this rookie scale extension deadline, or take their chances next summer as restricted free agent.
Got it. Okay. So is it just the general premise? I do agree with you. However, I would counter with, number one, I think a lot of these problems take care of themselves, and that's usually the inevitable injuries that occur during a season. It seems like, you know, only LeBron, Wiggins, and Towns are only perfectly healthy. You know, last year Boston probably had the same problem. Hayward's hurt in the first game. You know, injuries are inevitable, and they'll happen this season, and the Bulls will have talent to plug and play. And to me, it's just like a much better problem to have than, you know, not having enough, right, especially offensively. So, I mean, you saw that too with Oklahoma City. Look at all the injuries that they had throughout those years. So isn't that a little bit kind of mitigate somewhat the concerns?
I wouldn't build a team anticipating injuries, and you know, I understand what you're saying, but mm-hmm. I mean, I think if we forecast or project for injuries, I don't think anyone wants to have to forecast an injury or build with that in mind. So, in fact, in Oklahoma City, they were incredibly healthy for. Now they got there in 2008. You know, they didn't suffer a major injury, I don't believe, until probably 2011. Even 2012.
Yeah.
The Eric Maynard injury was like their first major injury. And that was 2011-12 when they were on the way to the finals. And they had to end up getting Derek Fisher. So
maybe I'm just something I'm so used to happening to the Bulls. I would also counter, though, about Levine.
That was like unintentional comedy.
Yeah,
right there,
exactly. And Levine already proved he can play with Wiggins and Towns. I mean, that was his best year. He was a 20 point per game scorer. He goes down with the ACL in February, but he played with two guys that demanded the ball. And it's kind of like, to me, last year, you know, what's it, 24 minutes per game in 27 games, or I can't recall if it was 27 games, 24 minutes per game. He knows going into every game, I better get my shots up. I better get them up. I think just the fact he's on a 4-year deal, you're going to see a completely different guy. Do you agree with that?
I don't. I mean, when you say completely different, we're talking both ends, offensively and defensively. You know, I think he's still going to go out there and take bad shots, you know, questionable, two bad shots. I think he's going to go out there, and I always like the effort he gave defensively on the ball.
Yes.
Off the ball, he needs a lot of work. And sometimes he's just a space cadet out there, man. He just loses focus. And loses his man and gets beat for a layup. You know, simple stuff that he should know by now after 4 years in the league. So,
yeah. I would also say, too, like this idea that the Bulls are going to be terrible defensively. I know they're not going to be great, but I think Dunn has first-team all-defensive potential. And if you're going to have a great defender, I would rather have it at the point of attack, at the point guard position, and down low. Like, to me, interior defense is so much more important than what you have on the perimeter. And, you know, I think Lopez is their second strongest defender, and I think Wendell Carter Jr., based on what we've seen in Summer League, is also there too. Do you think that those kind of those three guys can potentially mitigate how bad this team is going to be defensively? And it might be a little bit overstated that they're going to be just awful.
I think they're going to struggle because Chris Dunn can only do so much. I do agree with you that he's got first-team all-defense potential. And Robin Lopez is certainly an anchor back there. I will pump the brakes on Wendell because he's a rookie. You know, he's 19 years old, and you know, those guys, I mean, I don't care how much of a savant you are. I don't care how much you study. It takes time, and it's going to take him some time. But yes, those guys will help. But when those premier wing players come in here to score, who's going to stop them? You know, like, I think Zach is going to get up for those marquee matchups and really try to lock in. I think Jabari will probably be the same way. But the thing about young guys, and you know, I can use my OKC experience as reference for this as well. You know, it's not about getting up for the marquee game. It's about establishing consistent habits night in and night out. And the biggest thing that, you know, we haven't really mentioned, and I don't know what you have this team in terms of wins and losses, Fred, but
yes.
You know, if the losses pile up, everything that I'm saying and everything that I've written and talked about, that becomes, it gets highlighted even more. It becomes even more of an issue when the losses pile up and guys want to do their own thing and, you know, egos get in the way and you know, attitudes become a problem. They were able to avoid that last year, but I think everyone knew what they were playing for, or in this case, not.
Yeah, they were actively trying to lose for large swaths of the season.
Right, yeah. And this year I think is going to be different. Like, this year they have a playoff mindset. They got a playoff mentality where they feel like they can be in the thick of the Eastern Conference playoff race. And so, you know, if they stay healthy, they could have issues if the losses start piling up.
So
it could exacerbate all of the issues and concerns that I tried to lay out.
And to wrap this up, because I know we've gone over on time, and I can't tell you how much I appreciate you jumping on.
Take all the time you need, Fred.
That's where I disagree with everyone a little bit. And I notice you and the other beat writers are a lot more negative than me, believe it or not. Big surprise, Fred's positive on this team. Although I will admit, last year I picked the team at 26 wins, so I was almost on the dot. I have them winning 44-47, and here's why. Boston, I know, hold on to your seats. Boston, Philadelphia, Toronto. I think Toronto, if they get an engaged Kawhi Leonard, I think they could actually win the East. But Indy, Milwaukee, the Wizards. I have the Bulls as a 7th seed. I want to know what team is better than the Bulls outside of those six. And
I'd still put Cleveland above them.
Oh, my gosh.
I would still put Cleveland above them.
How and why would they be better without LeBron? You've seen their record without LeBron in the last five years.
But that was also when they basically, they didn't tear it down. They still had, Kyrie, but.
Yeah.
Oh, no, they did not have Kyrie. They drafted Kyrie after he left, didn't they?
Well, yeah. Well, obviously when he came back and he joined Kyrie in 2016 or 15-16, every time LeBron missed a game, even on those teams, they were terrible. You know, it's like, I think that team is going to be awful this year. And Kevin Love, that they overpaid for Kevin Love, who's getting old, who's going to be missing a ton of games. I am not a believer in Cleveland. Okay, but fair enough. We'll say they're close.
Now, Fred, let's be fair here. You know, if we're talking 7th seed, that's not exactly a believer. That's just saying that's one team that can be above the Bulls.
But it fits into my 7th pick last year, 7th pick this year, 7th seed this year, 7th title next year mantra. So that's why I have to say it. See all the 7s?
I like it.
You're one of the few, unfortunately, because every time
I didn't say I agree with it. I do like where you're going with it. I mean, it's clever, but
so you got Cleveland. All right, we'll even give him Cleveland. Who else? Like, just saying right now,
Detroit maybe with Reggie Jackson healthy for a full season and Blake Griffin being there for a full season. Dwayne Casey coming over. Nothing that does nothing for you.
Stan Van Gundy's allegedly this great game day coach. What a loser that guy was. I totally, Blake Griffin, The questions that get with that team to me, though, I mean, Blake Griffin's never healthy. They played so bad down the stretch. I mean, you bring up a good point. That team could be right there. That's the one of the teams that I felt like would be competing with them. Them and Miami. But that's it, man.
Miami always, it's just a big question mark to me. Like, I didn't think they should have been in the playoffs last year, and they found a way to do it. And, you know, Eric Spoelstra is a good coach. So, I mean, they could be in the thick of it again this year. But here are all teams that have just as much talent, unquestionably, if not more, than the Bulls. And they've got more experience, and they've got better coaching. So, I mean, you can argue Tyronn Lue and Fred Hoiberg.
I don't think Miami has anywhere near the talent the Bulls have. Like,
but they've got more experience, and I think experience matters, and I think the culture of winning matters. These guys have never won anything. Jabari Parker's been to the playoffs 3 times. I'm not sure how many times he played in it because of the injury, but he's actually been a part of the team that's gone to the playoffs 3 times. Outside of him, none of these guys have achieved anything. It's a learned behavior to know how to win, and these guys don't know that yet. So even though Miami, that would be the one team out of the three that we mentioned that I would say, okay, maybe you could say the Bulls have more talent, but they have a culture of winning. They've got leadership that has been there before and knows what it takes. So I give those guys a huge advantage over the Bulls if we're talking about which one could be more competitive next year.
Yeah, but I do get your point, but you saw a situation in Oklahoma City. We saw it in Golden State where immensely talented teams, overnight they could turn it on. And I feel this Bulls team offensively has 3 guys that can score 20 points per game. There were only 23 guys in the league last year who did that. I think they have so much talent. I always judge a team. If I'm sitting in a playground and you put both the rosters out there and we're picking teams, who am I picking? And for Detroit, I maybe take Blake ahead of Markkanen. It depends if he's healthy. But I think for the first 5 picks, the first 10 picks, I'm probably going with the majority of them will be Bulls. And I'm definitely, if it's Miami, I'm definitely taking bull after bull after bull for the first 3 or 4.
Yeah.
And after that, the Z sucks. I mean, that's the thing. Darnell, I mean, like, who else is scared? So you mean Cleveland, Detroit, Miami. Those 3 teams, I think you can argue the Bulls can beat all 3 of those. I mean, they're going to be right in the hunt there. Everybody else, I think the Bulls are better than.
What about Charlotte? Charlotte's always a big question mark for me as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good one, too, because I do like, I mean, I love Bridges, and he ended up there. I think that guy's going to be a good player. That's a tough one, though. They just haven't seemed to translate the wins. They got a new coach now.
A lot's going to depend on what they do with Kimba. You know, are they going to want to keep him, or do they move him? You know, what happens?
Exactly, good chance they do.
I'm sorry, go ahead, Fred.
No, good chance they do. Good chance they do move him. I mean, they're in such horrible cap situation, you know, there's a good chance they do trade him. It is a very tradable contract.
Yeah. But, I mean, here's the thing. Like, you know, I'm not disagreeing with you that they could be in the thick. I am disagreeing that they'll be the 7th seed and win 44 to 47 games. But, I do think, and I've said all along, that they could really make a push if things go well. They could find themselves flirting with the 8th seed. I don't think things are going to go that well. I think there's a lot of question marks, and there's a lot that has to be figured out going into the season, offensively and defensively. But, you know, I mean, I think maybe probably 30. I think if all goes well, and I'm talking about everything, lack of injuries, everyone's, you know, the offense is clicking, the defense is not nearly as bad as most of us think it's going to be. You know, the egos and the attitudes don't get in the way. They actually gel and play as one. 41 wins. That's my everything goes right for this team. 41 wins. With that being said, I think they're going to be closer to probably 33.
Okay. I mean, that would be an improvement. I think 33 wins, I think Fred would be fired. I really do. I think, you know, the management's expecting more than that. I mean, I will say this. I think Parker, and your article was one of the few I read that was really, I felt, critical of the move. I think overall, most people were probably pretty positive on it. And I'm more positive on it than I think most, just because the kid scored average 20 points per game. That's like a magic number for me. Anybody could do that at an age of 22. Like, for some reason in this city, scoring doesn't matter. It's bizarre to me. It's like, hello, you know, like, scoring matters. Like, you got to have scorers. I think he's an elite scorer, talent-wise. And I think he's going to like playing next to Markin a lot more than he does Giannis. To me, Giannis, I love Giannis. He's one of the best players in basketball, but he doesn't shoot jumpers well. And there's a natural floor contraction with him because that's what he doesn't do. Every scouting report on him, make him shoot jumpers, make him beat you from the outside, because if he gets inside on you, you're done. And I think he's going to have a lot more room with Lowry. And I think he's going to really do well. I really hope he does well. I mean, because he's a great kid, and I think it'd be a fantastic story. And you get that guy playing well, you can either trade him, or you could, you know, he could be a part of the part of the future. But I mean, isn't it possible that Parker could be the best player on this roster?
Yeah, and it's also possible that he could stunt Lowry's growth, which would be an abject failure if that is what happens. And that's the one reason why I thought that they should have just continued to grow organically. And not go out there and get Jabari Parker, who is the name that everyone, you know, sort of mentioned really for most of the season. So, you know, it was borderline predictable that they were going to do it, although it was kind of stunning actually when it actually happened. I just don't want to see Lauri Markkanen's growth stunted in any way. And I think when you have another guy that you have to worry about getting those 20 points, what's the cost benefit? And, how much are you going to have to give him the ball to get those 20 points? How much is that going to take away from Lauri Markkanen? These are all things that I have major concerns about.
So it sounds like you feel Markkanen, I feel he has top 10 potential. Do you feel that way too?
I mean, among the young players, he's right there, man. I mean, you talk about Ben Simmons and Jason Tatum and Donovan Mitchell. It's like, you know, this guy is holding his own in that league. You know, among that tier of guys. So if that's the future of the NBA, Lauri Markkanen looks like he, you know, when the LeBrons and KDs and Jimmy Butlers and, you know, all of these guys are out, it's going to be their league. And Lauri Markkanen has already made a case that he's deserving of being mentioned in that breath, in that sentence.
Great. Darnell, I can't thank you enough for the time you've given. Before we get into where people can find you at The Athletic and on Twitter and talk about your book real quick, I'd like to get one final question, or kind of two-part question. Who was your favorite player to cover in your history so far, and who was your least favorite player?
My least favorite was J.R. Smith. He was on those Hornets teams back when Chris Paul was a rookie and a sophomore in OKC, and J.R. was just a jerk. People rave about him now. The media raves about him now, but we did not see eye to eye for whatever reason. It's water under the bridge now, but he was probably my least favorite.
Wow, that's interesting. Russell
Westbrook has probably a stronger case because I was around him for 8 seasons, whereas I was around JR for, I can't remember if he made it that second season or not, if he got traded. Either way, 1 or 2 seasons compared to 8 with Westbrook. So
Westbrook,
I might change that and say Westbrook because my least favorite.
Oh, he was a jerk to you?
He's a jerk to everyone.
Really?
That's not Westbrook. Good to hear. I mean, the clips that you see and all of that, like, you know, I mean, that's how he is on a day to day basis. And when he does answer a question, you know, you're not getting much insight from it. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like you're just wasting your time. And the sad part is that we're all there to do a job, and that's part of his job description, but, you know, no one holds him accountable to actually,
Be a professional and be a good guy. I never understood that. Why do you got to be a dick? You know, I mean, like, does it take that much more calories to be a jerk than to be a nice guy? It's insanity to me. You know, I don't understand that. It's just bewildering. Like, I hear the same stuff about Tibbs. I mean, you know, everybody loves the guy. How many bosses that you ever had in your life that their whole entire life was their job and that was a good thing, you know? Like the guy, all he does is live basketball, and I'm like, everybody acts like that's great. I'm like, I don't want to be around anybody like that. You don't have any interest? And now your best guy. Who's your favorite?
I don't know. KD was up there just because, you know, for as huge of a star as he was and is, you know, he was just a good dude, man. He would give you time if you needed time. Again, the Thunder would try to run interference on that a lot of the times, but, you know, I'll tell you a quick story about KD. I went to to the Sea Pleasant Recreational Center that he used to go to. You know, he grew up playing at, and I wanted to do this profile of him, where he came from and all of this. And, you know, I didn't have an appointment, so, you know, shame on me. I walked in there. It's probably, you know, it was closing time, or at least, you know, after business hours time. It was probably, you know, 5:45, 6 o'clock. Sun was setting. I go in there, you know, no appointment. I just wanted to go in there and get a feel for the place, you know, put some color into my story and be able to describe the place. And, you know, this guy behind the counter was just being a complete asshole, not, you know, letting me in, saying that there's kids, just making up stuff. And you got to remember, this is the hood of, you know, suburban D.C. And Sea Pleasant, Maryland. So there's a way things are done around there. You know, if people don't know who you are, or you don't know who people are, then, you know, you should probably not go into those neighborhoods. But, you know, this guy was just being a jerk, and he would not let me behind these doors to go into the gym to see, just for, you know, 2 minutes to get a feel for the place and be able to take some notes. And, you know, making up all of this stuff about kids being in there, whatever, you don't have an appointment, who are you here to see, blah, blah, blah. So I got some people on the phone from the Thunder. Next thing you know, Kevin Durant's on the phone.
Oh.
Durant calls the guy, says, hey, this is Kevin Durant. And this is like, this isn't 2018 two-time finals MVP Kevin Durant. This is 2009, 2010,
yeah,
the making of a superstar Kevin Durant. So, but still, everyone knew who Kevin Durant was back then.
Sure.
Especially in this place. And, you know, here the guy is making a phone call on my behalf to try to get me into this place where he grew up, and just a genuine guy, man. The guy never let me in. That shows you what an asshole he was. But for Kevin Durant to actually take the time to call up this place and say, hey, man, I'm trying, let me try to talk to him. And I hand him the phone, and he says, I don't care who you are, but, you know, the guy
oh
didn't
my
have an appointment.
God.
So
Kevin Durant talks, gets on the phone with the guy, and he still wouldn't let him in.
That was my night, yeah. So.
Oh, that's a classic story. Yeah. I love it.
Darnell, but it shows you what Kevin Durant is made of.
Yeah, it is, that he would take the time to do that for you. I can't thank you enough. Let's hear about where you're at, and I also want to hear about this fantastic book, which I started reading, the Kendrick Perkins beginning was fantastic. And I, for whatever reason, I couldn't recall Nate Robinson being on the Thunder. I was shocked.
Yeah, he didn't play much. He was more of a cheerleader than a player, but you know, it was good times down there when he was down there.
Oh,
it wasn't long either.
Love him. One of my favorite Bulls of all time. That year he was here was just insanity how good that kid played. No, but so let's hear about on Twitter. Where can they find you on Twitter and at The Athletic?
TheAthletic.com. You know, obviously, I work for The Athletic Chicago, and, you know, we're The Athletic Shy on Twitter. And then I'm on Twitter at Darnell Mayberry, DarnellMayberry.
Yeah, and I can't, if any of the listeners, if you haven't paid, I think it's only like $3 a month I'm paying for a subscription. It is well worth it to get this additional Bulls news, especially with Cowley taking up the space in this time. You need to have good writers, and definitely, yeah, I can't say enough good stuff about you. And I can't tell you how much I appreciate you giving me 50-plus minutes on the Bullseye, man. It's great.
Anything for you, Fred. But let me add, I appreciate the compliment on The Athletic. And it's not just Bulls coverage. If you sign up, you get everything throughout the country. And you could probably speak to that just as much as me as a subscriber, Fred. But you get everything, and we've got some incredibly talented writers and reporters all throughout the country at this point, and we're growing and continuing to grow. So, you know, whether you're a Bulls fan or a Warriors fan or a Lakers fan, I mean, we've got reporters in most of the cities now with big league teams, and, you know, you get all of our content for one low price, and it's the best deal going, in my opinion, in journalism.
Amen. I agree 100%. Hey, Darnell, thanks again. I can't thank you enough for jumping on. The book, too. The title of the book.
100 Things Thunder Fans Should Know and Do Before They Die.
Amen. Fantastic. Yep. Highly recommend.
And it's just all about the Thunder and the history, some of the things we talked about, the early days with Russell Westbrook and Durant and Harden and Ibaka and just all the players who've come through, and, you know, the ups and downs with that franchise. So it was a joy to write.
Thank you. I can't thank you enough, bud. Thank you so much, and we'll have this up probably over the weekend, and looking forward to, you know, tweeting it out and getting as much press about this and the book as possible. But I can't thank you enough. This is great stuff.
Thanks for having me, Fred. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Darnell. Have a good one, bud.
Okay.
Bye-bye.